Now, the U.S. housing market is red hot in many communities, and after recent news reports, some worried that part of the problem could be blamed on Wall Street investors competing against average home buyers. But our next guest says investors aren't really driving high housing costs. The bigger issue, low supply of housing. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you having trouble buying a house right now? If so, what has it been like? If you're on the seller side of the equation, were you able to sell a home for more money than you expected? As a renter or homeowner, would you support more housing in your community to bring down housing costs? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Jerusalem Demsis is a policy reporter for Vox. Jerusalem, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Before we get to the investors and the supply issue, I mean, is this really happening around the country? Red hot markets, prices going nuts?
Yeah, prices have increased substantially over the last year due to a number of factors, including low supply of housing. Of course, mortgage rates have been really low, and we've seen a lot of people enter into the housing market. Millennials have been entering into their prime home buying years and are, you know, looking for single family homes, of which there are not that many in key locations.
I've talked to guests who have written about these investors, these Wall Street finance type companies getting into the single family housing market, buying homes and then renting them out. A big Wall Street Journal piece that you referenced in your reporting drew a lot of attention to this, went a little viral. Who are we talking about, first of all, when we talk about these, you know, business investors getting into this housing market?
Yeah, it's really important to figure out what we mean when we say investors, because a lot of the time what people are concerned about are, as you mentioned, these giant Wall Street firms, things like BlackRock or Blackstone, entering into the single family home market. And what we have right now is not a lot of data, but what we do have is data on investors as an entire class. And what that means is anyone who is not purchasing a home for their primary residence. That could be someone buying a second home or a vacation rental. It could be small investors flipping homes for profits. It could also be iBuyers, which are a new thing that have entered the market where, you know, investors who can make instant cash offers on homes and then sell them soon after. So it can also be mom and pop landlords, people who are buying a second residence to be able to rent it out. So what we've seen is that there's been an increase in investor activity as a whole, but there's not a lot of evidence that there's all of a sudden a gigantic increase in institutional investors and private equity firms actually entering the market.
Yeah, that's kind of been the story. Some people have been telling that these big institutional investors, they're buying up so much housing. That's kind of driving pricing millennials in particular out of the market. You looked at the percentages around the country of how many of these houses. Your conclusion is they're out there, but it's not the big part of the story. Can you expand on that?
Exactly. Every expert I've talked to has talked about the low supply of housing in the United States as being a primary driver of the housing crisis that we're seeing over the last year. You know, there's Freddie Mac has calculated an almost 4 million home shortage nationwide that has increased by nearly 2 million over the last couple of years. So that's really, you know, when we have fewer homes and you have more people entering the market, millennials are the largest generation in American history, you're just going to have a larger group of people bidding on the same amount of properties, and that's going to increase prices because sellers know that they can sell for higher prices because there's more people than houses. So, you know, and then looking closer at the numbers here, you know, people, we've cited research, the most recent one we have about how many institutional investors there are, so private equity firms included in that, is around 300,000 single family units in 2019. It's unlikely that's increased that much, and that's compared to roughly 80 million single family homes in the United States. So it's really hard to believe that on a nationwide level, these kinds of actors could really be driving the crisis.
And you write that there's kind of a chicken or the egg thing here, that maybe it's not institutional investors are getting into this market and driving up costs. It's that institutional investors see a shortage of housing and see an opportunity to make some money from it.
Yeah, exactly. So, of course, what we're seeing, and, you know, this is in official documents from, there's this group called Invitation Homes, which is one of the largest buyers, owners of single family homes in the market. And what they're looking for is places that are restricting supply. And so, in their documents, they'll write that they want to ensure that the value of their asset increases over time. And the way to make sure that a value of your asset increases over time is to keep it really scarce. So they're going to communities that are already restricting housing supply, that are making sure it hard to build any type of housing, whether it's market rate, affordable housing, public housing, any type. And they're trying to buy in those areas according to this financial document that they filed with the federal government. So it's pretty clear here that if you are really concerned about this trend, and you know there are obviously good reasons to be concerned, you know, the best way to combat it is to increase the supply of housing in these high demand cities and ensure that, you know, people can continue to own homes without the fear of being outbid by giant corporations.
We're talking to Jerusalem Demsis, policy reporter for Vox, with us today to talk about accelerating housing prices, the role institutional investors play in the housing market, and in just a bit, we'll get in more into the local zoning laws and how they can limit supply. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Love to hear maybe your personal experience if you've been in the housing market buying or selling or being a real estate agent. Love to hear what you're seeing in your community when it comes to housing prices, how fast houses go, how long it takes to find a house that you can afford. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our look at the housing market and what effect investors are having on it. Jerusalem Demsis is with us from Vox. She says the big part of the story is lack of supply, and in often cases, local zoning codes that make it hard to build new housing. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What do you think? What are you seeing if you are participating in the house buying or selling market? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Jerusalem, can you talk a little bit about what's happening in a lot of cities and other communities around the country when it comes to making it hard to build new housing stock?
Yeah, for sure. And this is really the big problem driving our housing crisis today, and has been for many years. As most, I'm sure, of your listeners know, housing has become unaffordable even before the pandemic began, and a lot of these trends really took off. But essentially, almost all cities and places in America have rules about what kinds of houses can be built and where they can be built. You know, some of these rules make sense. You don't want to be putting schools right next to polluting factories or things like that. But some of these rules were put in place without housing affordability in mind. Things like making it illegal to build a duplex or a quadplex, or making it illegal to build a small single family home or a single family home within 10 feet of the sidewalk. And what happens when you have all of these rules that make it harder and harder to build smaller homes and more affordable homes is that you get unaffordable homes. So in a lot of the country, despite there being a really large profit incentive for people to be even able to sell their own homes and turn those into duplexes or triplexes or quadplexes, it is illegal to build these kinds of things in a lot of the country. And what we've seen is, as a result, there's been marked lack of supply, not just in the most high demand cities, but in the outlying suburbs that are really attractive places for people to live, places with good schools, places near good jobs. And it's really creating a crunch in a lot of the rest of the country. As you know, as California's housing prices rise, we've seen people moving to places like Phoenix, Arizona, or at Austin, Texas, or Miami. And that creates a massive price pressure there, as those people coming from different states usually have higher bidding power. So this is really a national problem that is beginning in a lot of high cost cities.
Let's bring on a caller now. Ron is with us in Eau Claire. Ron, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, Ron? Yeah, go ahead.
My comment is that I took a new job in the Eau Claire area back in November and have been in the market since. And I'm walking around with triple 800 plus credit, a pre-approved $275,000 mortgage paper, and every home I've looked at, people are paying over list, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, and there are 10 to 20 parties at every listing on day one. So it's been a very tight market, and I'm going to drive for a while.
All right. Ron, I'm glad we could be with you there on your commute. Good luck to you in shortening it in the near future, hopefully. Jerusalem, Ron, not alone, right?
No, not at all. And this is, I think, the big story here is that due to this, you know, lack of supply, you have all of these people with really good credit ratings and, you know, everything that he just told us about having, unable to make a purchase on a home despite being available on paper to it. And, you know, it's a really bad situation because you, instead of having a lot of the pressure be put on local governments to increase the supply, you kind of have these free-for-alls at these houses. You know, there's been a lot of reporting of people waiving inspections, of placing $100,000 over asking price. You know, there's one viral anecdote of a woman promising to name her firstborn after the seller if they chose her bid. And, you know, that's a really unhealthy market. And a lot of the time you're getting a lot of animosity being placed at the feet of other people who are trying to buy homes, other people who are outbidding you. But the real thing is that this is a false sense of scarcity that cities have engineered, and they can reverse that if they would like.
Thanks for the call, Ron, and good luck. Joshua is with us next in Milwaukee. Joshua, hi.
Hello.
What do you want to tell us about, Joshua?
Yeah, I'm looking for some context about what feels like predatory home buying. In the last year and a half, I've owned my home for about 5 years, and in the last year and a half, I've been getting text messages, phone calls, sometimes multiple times daily, asking if I would like to talk about selling my house. They've even gone so far as to call my elderly father looking for me to buy my house when I've never put my house on the market, have no intention of selling. I don't know how they get my number or what list I'm on. Is there some context for that?
Joshua, thanks for the call. Jerusalem, I think I've heard of this, people getting postcards in the mail, things like that, saying, hey, let us know if you want to sell your house now, even for people who have no interest, like Joshua, in selling their house now.
Yeah, no, this is, you're not alone, Joshua. This is becoming increasingly the case, especially as the home prices rise in value. And a lot of times people are getting these calls because the government has started collecting a lot of data around who it gives mortgages to, and you know, in good faith wanting to do that. But a lot of scammers have been able to get a hold of that, and even other people who aren't scammers but are people who are just looking to purchase houses. But it can be very predatory, as Joshua mentioned, and you get people on the phone who are elderly, who are, you know, other folks who are susceptible to being scammed for whatever reason. And it is really unhealthy, and there should be more steps taken to ensure that it doesn't continue.
Thanks for the call, Joshua. We're talking to Jerusalem Demsis from Vox, talking about the hot housing market in the United States, what is driving it. And Jerusalem, another piece you wrote looked at what the Biden administration is calling for. Congress would have to work on this as well, I believe. But what kind of proposals are we hearing?
Sure. Yeah. So there are quite a few proposals on the supply side. So in terms of trying to figure out how to build more homes and how to really deal with the supply crunch, one of the ones that the Biden administration has proposed is creating a $5 billion pot of money, which states and localities could compete for. And the way that they would be able to get that money is if they reduce some of the regulations at the local level that are making it really difficult for people to build enough housing to meet the current demand. And, you know, it's an interesting idea. I think it doesn't probably meet the moment. Most experts I've talked to have said that it is probably a small but important first step to addressing this problem. There is also money that they're hoping to spend as part of the bipartisan infrastructure framework that would begin to rehabilitate and potentially build more affordable housing units across the country, whether it's through tax incentives and credits for developers or through more direct payments to public housing authorities at the local level. So there's some ideas there, but a lot of this action is going to need to come probably at the state level, at the very least, to make sure that localities are not onerously restricting new housing supply growth for whatever reason. And so that's really where most of the action is going to be need to be had.
And Jerusalem, let's talk about the local politics here, because you have a built-in constituency. If someone owns a home, they'd like, for the most part, its value to go up, apart from, I guess, property taxes. They want to see that that asset increase in value. If lots of new housing pops up and the demand goes down, it might decrease in value. So you've got this built-in constituency, right, to limit housing.
Yeah, I think a couple of things here. One is that there's a complicated economics of what actually happens when you build more homes, and researchers are still really looking into this. You're right. If there was all of a sudden, you know, hundreds of thousands of new homes on the market in one location, of course we would see property values drop. But if you really think about what would happen if tomorrow, let's say, you were able, all of a sudden you're a single family home neighborhood, and you were able to turn your single family home into a duplex. What would occur is that a developer would come to you possibly and would say, hey, I'm willing to buy your home for actually a lot more money now, because instead of renting it to one person or one family, I can rent it to two. So in a lot of cases, we could actually see home values rise if we are upzoning, is what they're calling it, when you allow for more density inside of a unit of land. But as to your broader point of, you know, people's concerns about property values, that's really a lot of what's driving this here. And you know, I think the problem is a lot of times cities, you know, they don't make the trade off between, you're right, maybe people won't see their house prices appreciate as quickly, but on the other hand, you could increase housing affordability. There's a lot of economic research that shows wages can increase. Over the course of 30 or so years, America lost billions of dollars in GDP due to these regulations, and it would have amounted to nearly $3,600 a year for the average American worker if these regulations were lifted. And, you know, that's quite a bit of money for people. That's like $300 a month that we're talking about increasing in the wages of the average American worker if these regulations weren't stopping people from moving to places where good jobs were, or not having to spend as much money on long commutes or on increasingly high rents.
Jerusalem, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's Jerusalem Demsis, policy reporter over at Vox. She was with us today to talk about investors in the housing market and a scarcity, a lack of affordable housing, and why the market is so hot now.